We are back on the air. Welcome, everyone, to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry and Rob Hubler.
Woo! Hey, great to be back.
You're listening to KRUU-FM, the best radio station on the entire planet, if you didn't know that. We have an incredible special guest with us today, one of my premier therapists from the Art and Counseling Center from Chicago, calling on in today to talk about a personal journey he's been on and how it might be interesting for all of us in our personal journeys. One of the shows I think we'll talk about at some point is The Wild, which is a great movie that just came out, and her personal journey. But for the moment, let's hear about Ray's personal journey. So this is Ray Barkley, a therapist in Chicago. Ray, say hi.
Hi, this is Ray Barkley. Scott always tries to get that L in my name. I appreciate it, but I am not related to Charles Barkley. Taller than I am. Happens to also be a different ethnicity. But yeah, this is Ray Barkley. I'm here in Chicago, and this is actually one of the places where my journey has led me.
So this is part one with Ray. Ray, we're going to talk about let's start with your personal journey today. Rob, anything you want to say before we get going?
Well, I want to know if he's taller than Charles Barkley.
Are you taller than Charles Barkley?
Definitely not.
Okay.
All right. In the height department. Even though I am from Indiana, I do not play basketball.
No. That's true. And you're probably a little wider than him at the moment.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, there you go. So, Ray, where do you want to start this journey? So you have a really fascinating personal history, as well as you've been a therapist working with me now for a couple of years almost, hasn't it?
Then in February, it will be 3 years.
3 years with the Art and Counseling Center. And we have gone through quite a journey ourselves, haven't we, with what we've been doing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We've started out with one mode of counseling, and we've moved away from that. But, it's about the clients. It's about counseling that is accessible to the client within the framework of insurance and their own ability to pay. So.
Yeah. The realities of the society we live in, isn't it?
But that doesn't keep us from being a more holistic sort of agency, because we want to include things such as nutrition and spirituality and exercise and meditation, which is different than spirituality, as they're all keys to mental health. So that's something to me that makes Ardent unique.
Yeah, that we could be both pragmatic as well as help everybody through their personal journeys. And it's been an interesting route. You say, in fact, you worked under me for a while, and you would say, yes, I'm the kinder, gentler Scott, or something like that.
Yes, I'm less confrontive than you are, Scott, but generally get to it in a more kinder and gentler way. Any of your clients that are listening might understand that. And that may have to do with my, our own methods and such have to do with our own woundedness. We try very hard not to counsel out of our own diagnosis, but we can't help but counsel out of our own journey. And that is one difference that I see in terms of the training that other people have, where their experience is not supposed to be informative of their therapy at all. Only their book knowledge, only what they've been taught. And I disagree with that, because it's unnatural. And therapy needs to become a natural part of our journey. It was a natural part of my journey. I had a fantastic therapist in Goshen, Indiana. John was, oh gosh, he was so patient with me, because it took me a couple of years to come out to John, and it took me a couple of years to come out to myself. And it was more of a giving up to or acknowledging a reality that was not going to change rather than coming out. A lot of little gay boys know they're different than their contemporaries, but we don't know what it is or what it's about. We may be more sensitive or maybe a little more creative, but we know that there's some kind of difference, but of course we don't know what it is. For me, the realization that it was something sexual was a realization when I was in seventh grade. And ever after that, locker rooms were a very terrifying and marvelous place for me. And such. So, and the difference between what I was taught was acceptable, what I was taught was not only acceptable, but anything outside of that would not lead to success or happiness. And what I was feeling inside of myself disagreed, and that caused a lot of emotional issues because of the genetic factors and the experiential factors. My journey with depression started pretty early as well, and that's often a situation that anyone that is hiding a part of themselves, whether it's their trauma history, abuse in their past, something that they've done or something that someone's done unto them, or just something that we are, that causes so much cognitive dissonance, just causes so much issue that depression, anxiety, and sometimes even what we could call trauma exists. I grew up in a conservative community in Indiana that, even though it was not the type of Christian faith that I was a part of, there were two fundamentalist denominations that were headquartered there, and one of whom had their seminary and their college there. Interestingly enough, most of my friends were from those two denominations.
What denominations were there? And, you know, you also had an interesting past because you also were going down the road of becoming not, it's like you had that fight within yourself, and yet you also decided to almost push that side away. I mean, we use the analogy of taking the beach ball and you shove it underwater, what happens? It pops up. Well, if you shove it harder underwater, what happens? It pops up even harder. And you really shoved that beach ball down. You got married. You were a minister for a long time. So you went down this road, and your journey was about denial. And it doesn't matter. So your journey was also about denying that part of sexuality with you. But it's also, you know, we see it all the time, for instance, with people like, so Ray, you're also ADD, as am I. And we also have this issue of not understanding even a simple condition of understanding ADHD. And so then you start denying that or start pushing away that side of yourself of how you could be more creative, how you could think in different dynamics and different possibilities, where you could take in diverse elements and hyperfocus at the same time. But when you don't know how to use whatever part, whatever is going on with you, it becomes destructive. Isn't that how you'd say it, or how would you say it differently?
Well, it does. It becomes destructive because there's, If you're hiding, like I said, and I don't care what you're hiding, but if you're hiding a part of yourself, it goes against a basic yearning that we all have, is to be fully known and fully accepted.
Beautiful.
I had a discussion with someone yesterday about the fact that it's unfortunate that when grandparents are raising grandchildren, because grandparents are supposed to be the unconditional love. That they're supposed to be an expression of unconditional love. where the parents are the ones that teach limits, the parent and the grandparents, well, you know, the limits don't matter because they aren't the parents. And that's a part of that whole thing as well. But coming out is not a decision. It is a series of decisions, whether it's coming out as a gay man, coming out as someone who has a troubled sexual past, you know, no matter what it is. And the first thing, I mean, and I'm looking at a book right now that was very important. I'm looking at my bookshelf, a book called Outing Yourself. And I've got another one about coming out to yourself. And that's very important, that you've got to keep yourself from blurring out rather than coming out. You have to be on the journey of accepting and understanding yourself.
Hey, Ray, let me interrupt you just for a second. I got a question for you, but first, let the listeners know that you're listening to KRUU-FM radio, Solar Power Radio in Fairfield, Iowa at 100.1, and this is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry and Rob Hubler.
And our special guest today, Ray Barkey, who is talking about, in this episode, part one of a double series with Ray, about coming out, but really more about being true to yourself and really finding yourself, no matter what's going on with you, not being in denial and being straight so you could really create a masterful vision. And by the way, Ray, well, let's get into this later. So, Rob, you had a question.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, twice a week I participate, kind of run a 12-step program. And it's a program for generally anybody that has an addiction. But the one thing that everybody shares in common is the thing you kept mentioning, the dual life. And that's, you know, I'm a 31-year alcohol and drug recovering addict. And I've got a number of other addictions, too, that I've recovered. I just the other day was in a meeting and somebody said, I have recovered from more things than they ever knew existed. And maybe it's true. But anyway, recovery happens to be my occupation. But I just, you know, the dual life is something that everybody shares. I mean, not everybody, but people with addictions, people like with all kinds of different lifestyles and things, and the lying and everything in order to cover it up. I'd like to have you talk a little bit about that dual life and how you did cover it up and what made you decide that you weren't going to do that anymore.
Well, you mentioned 12-step, and that's, there's, you know, the first step in 12-step is figuring out you're not where you need to be. You're not being authentic. You're, you know, and the coming out, you know, like I said, you acknowledge to yourself, and then you acknowledge to someone else. I'm simplifying the steps real fast here. And the whole, to me, one of the great powers of 12-step meetings is it's that place where you're known and accepted.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's, you know, and so, in my case, being a Christian man, and I mean, I kept praying, God, take this away from me, fix me. Why did you curse me with this? And that was a part of coming out to myself and reconciling to myself is nothing got fixed over those years of about 4 years, because nothing was broken, and I was praying the wrong prayer. I believe that a significant number of people that are in social service ministries and in Christian ministry, I don't know about other faiths, are there to try to earn their approval from God, which is antithetical to all, you know, Christian doctrine, but also, you know, kind of bargain with God, look, I'm going to give my life to the church, I'm going to, you know, so you've got to fix me here, sort of thing. When I was turning, I was married for 29 years. I was told in the 1970s, actually the first time I sought counseling, which was in 1974, find a good woman and marry her, it will fix it. Well, I found a good woman and I married her, and it didn't fix it because nothing was broken. And we were a good team.
Yes, and you actually really loved each other fully.
We loved each other in the way that we could.
Yes, that's true, but you loved each other.
Heavy sexuality. But we were a fantastic team. We did a great job of raising a kid that had its own challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie was the best pastor spouse that I've ever known, because that's a delicate position, sometimes even more delicate than being the pastor. I can honestly say in all those years, there was only one time that she spoke up back to a parishioner, and the parishioner had it coming, but that has to do with my son being a PK, and that's a whole other show.
Debbie was
right in doing that. So I found a good woman, fixed and married her. It didn't fix it. We had our own issues, and we actually persevered through several things that normally break up a couple. We had a child die at birth. Michael almost died when he was 19. I've had a serious injury. All those things are things that make a divorce more likely. But when I was fixing to turn 50, or I had just turned 50, I don't have a good memory for numbers. I took between August 4th, which is my birthday, and the beginning of the Advent, which is a busy season before Christmas. And I decided that I was going to decide. That was my coming out to myself sort of thing, I guess.
And you were still a minister at this point.
Yes.
You had been a minister for how many years with, again, what denomination?
I was with the Church of the Brethren, which is a very progressive church in all aspects of civil rights except for one.
Which one was that?
That happens to be GLBT. They were on the forefront of the racial civil rights. I could talk about that part of my heritage. And that made it particularly frustrating for me, because on all other civil rights issues and human rights issues, they had been in the forefront. On this one, they're dragging their feet. And so I'm not a Notre Dame football fan. I went to the University of Alabama, finished my education there. And anybody who follows football closely, the history of football, Notre Dame and Alabama are arch rivals. And I think it was, and Debbie is from South Bend, and and that requires you to at least follow Notre Dame football. So I chose during the Notre Dame football game to come out to my wife.
Wow.
Okay, well, it was also Christmas break, and Debbie is a school teacher, and her teaching is ultimately very, very important to her. She is probably one of the best teachers in the world. Debbie has been in the special education field since the very beginning, when it was coming out of association work, and the law was requiring that we take responsibility as a society to educate our special kids, too. And her reaction was very non-dramatic, which is a pretty good indication of our relationship. She said, "Don't do anything that would mess up your ordination. We can't have you out of work. We can't afford it."
Wow.
Yeah. So, the biggest place Debbie has struggled has been the loss of her role in the church, because just like I was a pastor for over 25 years, she was a pastor's spouse for over 25 years and was excellent at it. And I think I can empathize with her, because I was a very good pastor. I was an interim pastor towards the end, which an interim pastor is basically a church therapist. You go into a church that sometimes the pathology is that they don't know why they're there. They haven't asked the existential questions we all have to ask ourselves personally and answer. And sometimes it was pastoral misconduct or stupidity. And so, you know, I'd be sent to a church. My job was to diagnose the problem, develop a treatment plan, execute the treatment plan, and get the heck out. Like I said, so Debbie was denied that role, and we were a very, very good team. She still has a lot of animosity, I guess, or disappointment, because even though I'm back in ministry, she's not. You know. I was serving a church. I had a contract. That was one of the things nice about interim ministry. It's on a for a specific contract. My contract ended April 15th. So nothing public happened. But I had found a fantastic support group in Mishawaka, Indiana, in a small GLBT center there. And that was my main support as I was coming out, as well as my therapist, John, because I came out to John, and we actually planned how I was going to tell Debbie. I also worked with one of my best friends who had also been married, who was a part of the support group, about how did he tell his wife, how did that work. And also then there's a group called Husbands Out to Wives. It's a group on the internet. It's a more of a it's not really a chat group because it's not live chat, but it's a, I think we used to call them bulletin boards, where, you know, emails are sent.
Listservs.
Whole group. Yeah. And listserv, thank you. So
Ray, let me interrupt you for a second.
Support.
Rob?
Ray, I have another question, but first, again, you are listening to KRUU-FM Radio 100.1. in Fairfield, Iowa, and this is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry and Rob Hubler. And what I was going to ask you, I mean, by the way, we share lots in common. I was also an interim pastor most of the time. I'm a PK kid. I think my mom probably rivaled your wife as being the ideal pastor's wife. My dad was in the church for 61 years.
Wow.
And my two uncles are both Presbyterian ministers, so every woman I knew when I grew up was a minister's wife. But anyway,
and it is a different role being a minister's wife.
Oh, absolutely, and it's a different role being a PK, a preacher's kid, also.
Oh, I didn't know what PK was.
Yeah, PK, preacher's kid. The two worst kids in schools are always the psychiatric doctor's kids and the preacher's kids. Ray, continued on, because particularly about coming out and the you know, what you needed and what you got when you were coming out in terms of help.
Yeah, what everybody needs is our various, and I had a lot of groups that were, you know, focused on this one issue or general issues and persons that I had support with. So I had my support group that was a weekly support group in Mishawaka, and I'd been going to that during the time I was making that decision between August and December. I'd been talking to John about it, my therapist, and, you know, I had the Husbands Out to Wives group, the listserv, and then I also had, fairly quickly after I'd come out to Debbie, a relationship with a man that grew from a friendship to a mentorship to something else, as I was more fully immersing myself in the gay community, you know, because, like I said, kept things under wraps until I left the church. And did not move out of the farmhouse. We had a small horse farm until August. I'd actually moved downstairs. Debbie and I hadn't shared a bedroom for more than a decade anyway. And that's, you know, and it's a part of my life mission now, is to offer that same kind of support to anyone struggling with that same kind of question.
But it's also an interesting statement. We only have a couple minutes left, right? But what's also interesting about this is that if somebody sees you, you are not necessarily, let's say it like this, a gay therapist. You are a therapist, and if it happens, as we say, on our journey, I think it's more not always the specifics, but the mission itself. You're more sensitive to people's journeys. And so if somebody sees you, they wouldn't know that you were gay. You wouldn't say anything about it. And it wouldn't even be an issue unless somebody had a sexuality issue. Is that correct? Or how would you say that?
Yeah, that's correct. Most of my clients, my sexuality is not important to them. However, some of my clients, it's very important to them. Because just like yesterday, we had a young man call in, our fantastic intake person here, knows how to ask all the right questions. She knows how to kind of gently ask, is there any specifics about, you know, that would be helpful as I'm working at matching you with a therapist. Well, this young man said yesterday, well, if you've got a gay therapist, that'd help. Well, to that young man, I'm out. I was out from the get-go. Because, you know, it's functional in my relationship with him.
Yeah,
you know, because just like I don't want to sit there and try to educate my therapist on what it means to be a gay man, he didn't either.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so
that's
we only...
some of that shared journey thing. But most of my clients, it doesn't matter because it's the life journey. It's the, you know... transitions, it's the relationship issues that are the commonality, you know, and then just the human condition is the biggest commonality that I have with all my clients.
Ray, before we close in the next minute here, if somebody has a question regarding this or just regarding life's journeys, is it okay that they contact you?
Yes, it's okay that they contact me. They contact me through Ardent Counseling Service.
What is that email that they would contact you at?
It would be Ray, R-A-Y, at Ardent, A-R-D-E-N-T, .com.
Ardent Center.
Ardent Center, thank you. I don't email myself much, Scott. Ardent Center, Ray at Ardent, A-R-D-E-N-T-C-E-N-T-E-R, .com.
You can also contact us, and we can transfer or get people in contact with you, but at mentalhealthmatters@kruufmradio.com. I think that's it.
No, not radio, just kruufm.com.
Mentalhealthmatters@kruufm.com.
You know, and a lot of times it can be a matter of just kind of listening a little bit and saying, you know, I've got a book on my shelf. You need to get on Amazon or, you know, that sort of thing. And read that, you know, that sort of thing. And then if, you know, most of your listeners are there in the Fairfield area, and my other office is actually in Peoria.
Ah, yeah.
So that's not that far away from Fairfield.
And right now you are back to being a minister, a pastoral counselor, a minister, and a regular therapist. You have three full different roles. Anyways, Ray, we've got to go. Is there anything else you'd like to say in closing? Thank you so much. And part two will be coming up next week for everybody on Ray talking about spiritual emergencies and other really interesting things with me and Rob. But before we do, is there anything else you'd like to say, Ray, to close out today?
Well, I'm upset that you insulted me by calling me a regular therapist.
You are definitely not a regular therapist. You are definitely my best therapist. But no other therapist is listening to this one. You are fantastic, Ray. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And we'll see you all next week. Bye.